Hello,
Jason. How are you, fine fella?
Francis, or good afternoon, or whichever it may be over there.
It is a crazy, crazy sweltering afternoon in the London, UK, man. I'm sitting here and I'm sweating like a hot dog outside of Broker's Deli. Oh, but anyway, good to see you. And you're out San Francisco way, representing the alphabet and looking sharp in his black t-shirt. This is Jason, gents. I've been looking really forward to having an interview with Jason. Met him in New York at Consensus. What a knowledge on the crypto realm. Bursting with the facts. He's totally immersed in it. This man is young, but do not be fooled. He is wise beyond his years in terms of what's been going on. Jason, awesome to have you. Apologies for cutting in. Can you just give everyone your background and your experience on the crypto in terms of how you got to be in the game and what it all means to you?
Okay. So a quick... we would probably go back to, the 90s, when I discovered the internet at a young age. I was just fascinated by the internet. I think when I was first on the internet, with a dial-up connection, there's probably very few websites. And I was just got out of school. I always been interested in, I think in the 2000s where you had Napster came out. Distributed file sharing, the technology where it enabled people to do things that otherwise wasn't possible has always fascinated me. Then you had Kazaa, LimeWire, and eventually technology really has enabled, especially as a young child, I've been, fortunate enough to kind of got into technology, really into computers. I just always had this knack for these kind of things. So fast forward, throughout the 2000s all the way up to 2010, I was pretty much I wouldn't say professional, but I was very immersed in the whole gaming scene, competitive gaming, internet, online games, that whole, and also I made money doing that, as a kid, just trading and digital assets, game apps, things like that. So that's kind of how I just fell into that vibe. And then what happened was around 2010, I got hacked games that accounts that I had for over a decade. I spent literally a decade of my life playing that as a kid, and it was immense value of memories. And also monetary value, because the sheer amount, I was literally top players, had a lot of wealth, actual tangible wealth that could be translated into real dollars, right? That's how I was making my living.
So how was that? What was taken when you were hacked in the gaming world?
Well, so what it is about, it's the digital reputation of so gaming is sort of a lot of kids, parents, especially adults, they didn't grow up in that kind of environment. So the digital realm is relatively foreign to them. But as someone who grew up with technology and gaming and that whole, I practically grew up with it. It's very important to note that millennials and young kids place a great amount of value into digital things and digital assets, their digital identity, right? They care more about their online personia, their online reputation, more than in the real world, because that's the world we live in. It's a digital realm. So
I get that, Jason. I grew up in the generation where I must have thrown $20,000 or $30,000 into coin-based machines in the old school days. I was just a kid in the wrong generation for that. I see the games today, they're so much better. I mean, I played black and white damn Asteroids and Space Invaders, giving my age away. I totally understand being utterly immersed in that. I mean, if that had been in my house, our dream was pinball machines in our garage and Space Invaders machines in our bedroom, That was good. That would be
just the other day. Yeah, just the other day, my buddy took me to this really dope arcade bar down in San Francisco. It's by Soma. I forgot. It's pretty much a a bar with all the old school arcade and pinball is like, oh my god, this is great. But anyway, so back to the hack. So what happened was I lost, you know, because what I was, I built up such, it was like almost an online economy where you can, you know, you had shops, you can, it was very almost like sort of like what Bitcoin today is, right? It gave you a lot of these opportunities to buy and sell stuff and learn how to trade. There were stocks, there was all of this fun stuff.
What were you guys buying and selling, by the way? I mean, once you're on the gaming, I thought it's all about
virtual items.
Yeah, okay. So guns and weapons to shoot people.
Yeah, guns, weapons, tools. You were selling, you know, all kinds of shit. Like, it's just, it's kind of like the evolution that I was already immersed in that whole digital asset, virtual currency, that kind of space for a long time because I was a player and I built up, like, basically, you know, every day, the way I made my living when I was like 14 or 15, I'd be selling weapons that I would get for like cheap because I, you know, like once you play the game enough, you know, you pretty much gather up like a cash flow. You can, I was making like $200-$300 a day just selling items to people. Like my buddy ran, I didn't know how to build websites. He started a website because there are kids who don't want to like, you know, spend the time and resource to actually get the item. They just want like, I'll just pay $100 for this cool gun. And that's how I made my living because I was just like, oh, I played this game for a decade. I already know all the tricks and tools. So I was just generating free cash flow. Like my account, like the avatars, like the ranks, like everything was so decked out. It was highly thought after by a lot of people. So I think the hacker targeted me, social engineered her. And the sad thing is the company didn't help me at all. Like I felt so cheated by a centralized company that owned 10 years of my life and had it stripped away. That hurt me so much. It drove me to look for an alternative. I'm like, I need to do something where I can't be hacked. I need something that is, you know, unchangeable. I need something that's out of the centralized control. Because, like, I was fortunate enough never to have lived through. I was very young, so I didn't have the opportunity to kind of see the wider range of, like, you know, the financial system and the banks and all that thing. That came later. But for me, it was just like, well, I just had all of this stuff stolen from me and no one could help me and there was nothing I could do. It was the worst time of my life. I mean, I'm literally talking about for a kid, like $30,000-$40,000 worth of stuff, like being stolen. It was just horrible. So that what drove me to sort of kind of like, I was like, okay, what do I do now? Because now I don't know what to do. I don't want to play that game, restart, build everything all over again. Hell no, that's going to take me too long. So my buddy sent me something on Bitcoin because I was always, you know, interested in the cyberpunks, the whole hacking and all that scene, right? So that's kind of how like fell upon Bitcoin, and I began to really like learn about it, the technology. I mined the Bitcoins with my computer. Unfortunately, I didn't, you know, back then when you were a kid, you didn't really think that too much about the money aspect or this thing's gonna be worth, you know, shit, tens of thousands of dollars in the future. So you kind of just played around with the technology, right? Mainly from an interest point of view. And then I didn't really deep dive into it until 2 years later, around 2012. That's when I kind of went into, during that 2 years, however, I did educate myself. I began learning more about the economy, the financial system, how everything's put together. And then it struck me like, holy shit, like Bitcoin is something really, really different. And this could potentially change the world. So that's when I decided to go full diving into crypto. I Bitcoin actually here in San Francisco, just down Potato Hill, around March 2010. I think at the time there was very few people on the network, but it was purely like a pursuit of, you know, technology and that kind of thing. I wasn't thinking about mining Bitcoins to make money because that wasn't in my head. I was a student. So then I moved to Taiwan shortly about. Bitcoin there, power is a lot cheaper. The power here is ridiculous. And just kind of sort of evangelized Bitcoin where I was in a local capacity because no one has really heard about it. Just kind of did trading. So it just kind of like gradually played along in the community. And then eventually I moved on to the altcoin scene blew up. I got out of mining and began, you know, basically buying and selling altcoins, just like what I did, you know, So everything just kind of fell into a way where I felt really comfortable.
What year was that, Jason? Because in a way, despite being having plenty of years on me, or less years on me, you were really a veteran despite your youthful age. And what year was that you started trading altcoins?
I would say 2012. So when I was like, that's about 4 years ago.
And when you were Bitcoin mining, was that sooner? Was that 11?
That was a bit ahead, but around the same time. So 2012, 2013 was when I really deep dived. So for 2 years, I kind of like kept an eye on Bitcoin, but I stopped mining because I had my Acer netbook that I bought. I was a student. I had like $800, at the time, like my life savings. So I bought a computer for like $100 off eBay. And then it was an Acer netbook. I used that to mine Bitcoin the first time, back in 2010. It basically burned up my CPU so bad it killed the computer. So I was like, what the fuck? I just literally spent like $100 when you only have, that's like 10% of all your money on a computer, and running this program just destroyed it. I was like, oh shit. So I sold it off on eBay for scrap. I, deleted, my hard drive.
How many bitcoins had you mined by the time it threw in the towel?
I think probably hundreds.
Wow. It certainly paid for itself in hindsight.
No, you could solo mine with a shitty little netbook that cost $100. You could hit a block within like 20, 30 minutes. Solo block, like 50 bitcoins.
Wow.
Yeah. I just wish I didn't sell my computer, because like I would have, just some piece of history right there, because I ran the original Satoshi client, and it was very basic, and compared to what you see today, it's arcane and old, but it was the original stuff. So
that's fabulous. The amazing thing about this is that you're going to be a memory. Your memories are a book from right the Genesis. The Adam and Eve. You're one generation after Adam and Eve. If Adam and Eve is Satoshi, or I call the legend or the fairy tale for adults, I'm a bit suspicious on this, but we'll get into that later. You're right after that. So let's bring it forward to the events that people recognize now, and this is where your big value is going to come, and this is where people are going to open their eyes and say, "Shit, I need to listen to this young man." Coins. What have we got? What's crap? What's good? How do we determine? How's it rolling in the ICO? What's your take? What should someone be doing? Let's say they're my age or your age, in fact. It doesn't really matter, but they're only just waking up to Bitcoin or crypto broadly as a category. What do they need to understand? What's the most empowering thing about all of this? Or what is the most out there thing? What's the scale thing that they've not yet understood that they totally need to get? What would you say to them first?
So for me right now, I'm with Alphabet Digital Currency Fund. We're one of the world's first regulated digital currency funds. So I'm contributing my value to this great team that in the essence of, I don't come from a professional trading background. I don't have a professional, financial background from the traditional finance. But however, I have seen literally this space growth from literally close to inception. I mean, like, I wouldn't say like 2009, because I know people back in the 2009 days, that's very old school. But I'd say 2010 is pretty damn early. So you kind of see in the past seven years of the growth and the change of this entire industry. And it's almost, I mean, the entire history is, seven, 8 years old. And I've seen probably 90% of them. So what's interesting to people nowadays, I think it's the realization that, Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, digital tokens, like this technology is going to severely disrupt a lot of things. Just like, and I always tell people this, believe it or not, like, and I've been saying this for years, Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, digital tokens, blockchain technology, it's going to be bigger than the internet. So if we just date back from history, I think it's hard to see the future. I can sit here and talk about the future, but people are like, I don't have a clue what you're talking about. But if we just look back in history from the beginning of the internet, how much people didn't understand the internet, how few people saw the potential of the internet, I think we can kind of say, hey, if this thing is just as good or even more powerful than what the internet could have done for the world, I think you can sort of imagine the kind of impact that you can already see in such a short, you know, 5-6 years, the past 2 years, the past year, the innovation, the amount of buzz that cryptocurrency has really stung the world. I mean, literally, you would have people who are just disbelievers. I mean, when I first saw Bitcoin, it wasn't anything special to me until much year later. It struck me like almost 2 years. I think the general time frame that I've seen, it'll take you about a year and a half to 2 years until it just boom, like your mind just goes, holy shit. Like a lot of people are going to hear about it. I heard about it, but it wasn't until a year and a half and 2 years, sort of like the seed kind of brew in your head, you kind of really like pop. I think that's the moment. And right now, that's what we're seeing. All the interest that we have today is all the seed that has been brewing for the past 2 years. Since 2014, 2015, people heard about Bitcoin. They didn't really want to do anything about it, but they heard of it. And that seed kind of sown for the past 2 years. And now it's like you're seeing the first stage of explosion, like boom. People are like, oh shit, this is. And guess what? Even today, more and more people are getting the seed implanted. And the next 2 years, it's just going to be a continuous tsunami of new entrants into this great market. And I think this is not just another asset class. This is not just another new market. It is a revolutionary thing that has happened to the world. It's bigger than the internet. And, you know, I think
I can concur with that. I have to say, I agree with you. I think it's about money. It's about payment systems. It's about future legal systems, contracts. It's about doing business in an entirely different way.
My goal that I always tell people, I say from the beginning, Bitcoin is too valuable to be used just as a currency. This is back in the days when Bitcoin was like really, really cheap, right? Yes. Because the if you look at Bitcoin, how it started, it was bootstrapped from nothing, right? There was no value. And a lot of people, you know, I think that one of the infamous examples people talk about is the 10,000 Bitcoin pizza, right? Back in 2011, the father of GPU mining who came up, you know, he figured out how to use GPUs to mine Bitcoins very fast. Right? Satoshi actually emailed him, told him, hey, you know, Bitcoin's not ready for this, please stop. But he ignored it and continued, you know, and that's how Bitcoin's network hash rate just grew. So let's just highlight that
because that's an interesting little point in history, and this is where you're starting to drop real gems that folk don't know. The GPU thing, from what I understand, very little that I understand, because I'm here from the trading side, you're here from the crypto side. I'm getting crypto-wise, you're getting trading-wise, but I'm like a novice in comparison to you in that element. This was a CPU, this was a power aspect that boosted the mining and the ability to flush coins out, was it?
Triggered. So in the early days, of Bitcoin, you could use your CPU, which is your central processing unit on your computer, sort of like the brain that processes. But CPU, and that's what everybody used was CPU. Like, but when Laszlo figured out you could use graphic processing units, which is like the cards that you use for gaming, right? Yes. You can do a lot of parallel processing, similar. It was designated for calculating massive amount of, you know, pixels and calculations.
Can I jump in right here? We've had on the tech side, we've had a major run in NVIDIA, which is a chip maker for...
And AMD.
AMD, of course, as well, yes. These are chip makers. Do you think that some of that demand, just bringing it a little bit of real world in here, because people may be battling to come into this new Alice in Wonderland for them, this brings it back into a little bit of real... Has the run-up in those potentially been driven by the scaling up of mining, et cetera?
Absolutely.
Crypto?
Let me tell you this. Back in 2013 and 2014, I was in Taiwan. I literally had a de facto supplier. I had the monopoly supply of all the GPUs in the world because Newegg, Amazon, everybody was out.
I'm talking to the Yakuza, the chip makers Yakuza, right?
Yeah. So I had connections to the largest distributors. I made friends with every single manager and Asus, MSI, you name it, like Gigabyte, all those card companies. And I told them, get me all the GPUs that's coming out of your press. Nobody in Taiwan idea what Bitcoin mining was. I mean, some people did. They were kind of like homebrew, right? But nobody was doing it on a massive scale. So I was like, you're telling me I'm sitting here on the mother load of all the GPUs in the world. I mean, you had Sapphire, you have, you know, a lot of card companies in the US, but they still get their stuff made in Taiwan because TSMC, largest chip maker, they ASIC chips and the GPU chips. So everything's based there. And I was just like, okay, so I just went on Bitcoin Talk and I sold GPUs to people at a cheaper price than Amazon, cheaper price than Newegg, and I was still making a very, very healthy profit. I mean, that was sort of like a homebrew operation that I just kind of ran out of the Bitcoin Talk.
It's fair to say you also an entrepreneur of note in the technology stroke new world currency space, because you've shown an ability to trade. You're not an official, what I call, technical financial trader, but you've got an ability to trade. You've spotted the opportunities, you've had vision, you've seen forward, and you've done some bloody damn interesting things that probably falls under an overlap of entrepreneurship and trading. But so we had a major flex point on the when the chips went GPU, and that allowed did that allow for a higher yield rate in the mining, and that led to greater proliferation. What was the effect of that? Explain it for a layman.
So the effects of the GPU mining basically made Bitcoin mining much more efficient. It drove an arm race because GPUs were very, very hot. So literally, I mean, I had a three-story building rented out in the countryside filled with GPU racks. It's noisy. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. And people would be like, why is your power bill so high? And people look at you funny, but you're like, you know, I'm doing computer calculations. Like, I'm literally going to these computer stores and I'm picking up boxes, like 50 GPU a box. Like, I'm not buying like the individuals. I'm buying them by the boxes. And
I
the
could
store,
just imagine store, that store guy's face. Here comes a fresh-faced young man and said, how many chips you got? Okay, I got my truck out the back and I've opened the double doors. Yeah. How long is it going to take you fellas to empty all your stuff into the back of the truck?
Like, literally, I was buying that stuff by the boxes. And these guys were like, what are you doing? Like, I'm just like, I'm doing computer calculations with these cards. That's all I said. I didn't. And then gradually they were like, dude, like, tell me what you're doing, because you're buying, I was buying on a massive level. Like, it was pretty ridiculous, because I'm coming in with cash, just buying this stuff like crazy. And I'm getting them shipped right away after I pick them up. I'm literally just pull them up to the post office. I'm making calls in the store. I'm like, dude, I just got two boxes, 100 GPUs. And the guy's just like, I'll take it. And he wires me the Bitcoins and, you know, the rest is history kind of thing. So that was the point where I was like, dude, mining is really difficult, and to be honest, I filled up my entire three stories full of miners and stuff, and I'm like, dude, it's a lot of work. I wasn't really partnering up with anything. It was just me and my family sort of like helping me out. And then I was like, dude, I see so much demand for this stuff. I was like, naturally, I just want to sell the picks and shovels. So I kind of turned it into, you know, redirecting that into just sort of, you
know. That was the end of mining for you a little bit, and that started bringing you into the more space where we find you today, not in the asset management.
Then there's also the ASIC, the rise of the ASICs, right? The application specific integrated circuits dedicated to dedicated for one thing, to mine Bitcoins. I was also one of the first people to introduce the Terahash miners to the U.S. When people are just running Avalons at 300.
Wow, that's fabulous. Right there at the beginning. And by the way, that was a big deal. We were in an asset management call chat with a customer, I can't name it. One of our guys on the Alphabet team were highlighting that I think this is only the third new release of an ASIC chip that's coming out that was affecting. Is that Sias, one of the new coins with an S? I'm battling to keep up. That may get a big pop. Sci-coin, is it? And the effect of that. But we're going to come forward and all these tips and all of this amazing stuff and which coins are going to get. But it's good to get the backdrop for you. I want to do a couple of calls with you, and I really love to give you a chance to properly lay down the road and the journey you've taken so far. So after the ASICs, what's next? What was happening? These are all the key inflection points.
So after the mining, and I was like pretty involved in the mining business and the whole mining thing. And then what I was beginning to think was, the first moment was my buddy who invested in a mining pool, right? So it kind of went towards a software development. Like, basically a pool is where it's like sort of like a website or a piece of software that you build, and you kind of congregate all the miners together in the pool. You get a portion of their collective power. So basically you're building like
cooperatives, we'd call them here. Yeah.
You became collective, and all your spending is development cost and running the website. So that was when I saw my buddy, and he was making, ridiculous amount of money off the pool, like back in the day, just for an investment.
And the guys that are watching and listening, what is ridiculous money for that time, for those years? That we're talking 2012, it sounds like now.
It's like making 500 Bitcoins a day.
Wow. Just think about the value of that today. Wow.
That's like $1 million, something like that.
Yeah, well, that's, if it were 1,000, it would be 2.5 million. So you're talking about 1.25 million.
Yeah. So it was pretty lucrative money for seeing my buddy. I'm like, whoa, like I'm here just doing.
And that was a day. Did I hear you right?
Yeah.
500 a day. Yeah. That's obscene. And how old?
Back in the days, when you mine Bitcoin, you can hit a block. You can hit 50 Bitcoins in 30 minutes. So imagine if you ran all day, you could easily get like tens of thousands of Bitcoins back in, easily.
That's
with one computer.
What was the age of this gent?
What was the age of this?
How old was he? And did
he lose? He was 23 at the time.
And yeah, he was making what is equivalent today of literally 1.3 million. It's actually 2,700 at the moment, or 2,600. So 1.3 million a day. I don't think he knew that at the time, because, of course, it wasn't worth that at the time.
But he was pretty much – he was one of the earliest believers, some of the earliest people I know. So he started, hey, man, instead of doing mining, I'm investing in Bitcoin pools. And I was like, how does that work? Explain to me. Because I know you could join a pool. Eventually, solo mining wasn't viable anymore. You weren't making as much. So you kind of joined a collective pool to kind of share the, get a more piece of the pie, per se.
Yeah.
So I invested in the pool, and he was generating a lot of Bitcoin, because the sheer amount of size of the participants, and you get a little vague from them, it adds up. And the initial investment was I think you probably put in 1,500 Bitcoins.
Yeah,
So in terms of the time, it wasn't that much money, but today you're thinking about
it. It's huge. In terms of Bitcoins that have gone through your hands, having started early and having not maybe seen the huge value that would later come, you've probably had, in current day terms, billions go through your hands in terms of Bitcoins, in terms of your trading and letting them go and buying stuff. Yeah.
I'd say at least the hundreds of millions. I think I missed out hundreds of millions of dollars. But no, it's okay, because I think in hindsight, no, everyone can say, I would have done this or that. But the reality is, I'm just happy with where I am today. I think we're still early in the space, and just happy to be part of it. And those lessons and those things that you miss sort of help you
for now
realize and build your conviction today. Right. Similar to trying to convince someone hey, you really got to look at Bitcoin. They're going to be like,
why?
What is this? Right. Years later, you'll be like, oh, shit, I could have, done this and did that. Oh, let me get serious about it. That's I'm happy to actually sort of miss that in the early days. I don't think as a kid, who is just, out of school, I just graduated from high school, you're going to be like, oh, I'm going to be all of a sudden become a Bitcoin guru. I think I have friends who did that. They're doing very, very well nowadays. But it's sort of like they're kind of like in this I don't know how to tell people about this, because it's literally like it's like when you're playing a video game, Francis, and you found the unlimited money cheat or something.
Yeah.
In the game of life.
Yes.
The amount of wealth creation that has occurred in cryptocurrencies in the past 7 years is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Never before in history has such speed of wealth. It is bigger than the internet.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. And it's going to be continually bigger than the internet. It's going to create billionaires and millionaires like no tomorrow. This is going to be one of the greatest tech bubbles we're going to undergo through in the next 20 years.
Yeah.
That's why I see. So given that, but it sort of put them in a weird place. I have a lot of friends. Unfortunately, I did have a friend who passed away earlier last year, just because he just, being reckless with himself. But, you know, he was a very early Bitcoin person too. But, you know, so that's kind of the thing that concerns me.
It's going to bring all the challenges that sudden wealth does bring with it. You know, it's about being a teenage sensation football star. And,
as a kid, we know, out of India, he's 19 years old. We nicknamed him the shitcoin millionaire. He's 19 years old. He's made over $10 million just doing, you know, trading coins in the past, you know, 2 years. And he's legally only allowed to withdraw $2,000 from his bank account every day. And, like, what do you do as a kid, like, at that kind of thing? He's, you know, he's young and he's doing pretty well for himself. But it's just like, there are a lot of kids like that. And then they sort of lose direction pretty easily if there's, you know, because it's a different world. It's like they're not, they didn't build, you know, their business over 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's come too far too soon.
Too far too soon, yeah. So they don't
have and there's emotional development of life that needs to happen. I wouldn't want to be in that situation. I'm quite happy to be the current age that I am. Let's move forward into the coins and the realm of the coins. You are a bit of a Monero whale. Tell me about Monero and why you love him so much.
Well, I wouldn't say I'm a Monero whale. I think one of the most important things that basically, you know, I don't really ever, to be honest, I don't really ever disclose, you know, personal crypto holdings.
Not asking for that.
Yeah. But Monero is a very unique coin. It actually, I started mining Monero, you know, since the early days. It was actually, the history of Monero was actually created by, it was actually called BitMoneros. And then what happened was the creator was sort of like this not very cool dude that the community didn't really like. But the technology was interesting. It was the implementation of CryptoNote and CryptoKnight algorithm. The protocol is CryptoKnight, and the algorithm that it uses is CryptoKnight. So it's a very unique algorithm and a very unique implementation of the cryptography in which it allows, you know, pretty much anonymous transactions. Relatively compared to Bitcoin, Monero is pretty much like anonymous.
That Bitcoin is far from it's entirely anonymous because, of course, we've got the blockchain and how it gets kept.
Bitcoin is pseudo anonymous in a sense, contrary to what most people think. Oh, Bitcoin is anonymous. No, Bitcoin is actually not anonymous. It actually has perfect audibility trail of every single transaction since the beginning of time. So actually, you know, I think there's a lot of false assumptions in cryptocurrency. And, you know, in general, right? People just don't understand. But Monero is truly revolutionary. It is not a fork of Bitcoin, completely rewritten on its own. I would say if you're scared of Bitcoin and what do you think Bitcoin, how disruptive it is, Monero is 100 times worse. It's 100 times more scary. Okay. Yes. It's like the equivalent of like TNT and like the nuke. It's like, it's ridiculous. But the technology is very interesting. I think, you know, Monero is definitely one of those things. It's, you know, a lot of people are scared by it, you know, and they are right to be, because I would consider personally Monero could become weapon grade, you know, cryptography. It could eventually even be banned.
It's kind of like the dark web version versus the real web. It's really uncharted and completely undisclosable in your best take of opinion that it can't be cracked.
Yeah. I mean, there's things, you know, Monero is just a very – I think it reminds me of the original philosophy of the Bitcoin group back in the old days. So the developers are fantastic people. You know, a lot of them are my friends. They're great people. They really have a passion. They're not out here just to make the money. You know, in fact, Ricardo, he always tells people don't buy Monero, you know, in public. But, you know, contrary to people, you know, they just keep on buying. So Monero is sort of like one of my favorite coins. Because I think it really demonstrates what's possible with applied cryptography, in the essence of its tools. Now, whether people use the tools to be, you know, doing good things or bad things, that's up to their personal choice. But I think the tools are really powerful and should be necessary for average citizens to have, because the privacy is something that, you know, it's It's something that I believe that inherently people should have. And it gives sort of like this balance and check to, you know, government's, you know, ability to control its citizens, essentially.
Which you and I are both very militant advocates for, you know, real, keep the state out.
I think it's not about, for me at the end of the day, I'm never about really overthrowing governments or, you know, I think it's a simple fact to point out. You know, I think all models, all business models, you know, as long as they work, it's great. But I think at the end of the day, transparency, being truthful, taking care of other people, that's a big thing in my life. Right? I believe that you can still, you know, like governments, banks, you know, they started off as, you know, good intentions. But the problem when power centralizes in a place for too long, there's a need to decentralize. It's sort of like this cycle.
Absolute power, absolute corruption builds absolute power, and you get the, you know, you get the synopsis on one. Whenever someone gets too much power, you get the corruption.
So here's why I'm thinking. Just from let's just like not dive into the box. Like from a cycle point of view of how the world works, when power congregates, you know there's going to be someone or something down the road that aims to disrupt it. It's just like breathing. You know, you got to inhale and exhale. That's just the way it works. So inevitably, when you're in a position of power and one day someone's going to try to take your lunch, it's going to happen regardless whether you like it or not. It's not because someone just don't like you. It's part of life. It's power. It's part how the world works. It's part, like, if you look at every major disruption, do you think all these companies are happy what the internet did and ate their lunch? They're pissed. But what can you do about it? Nothing. It's inevitable. So I think, moreover, I begin to see countries who are embracing cryptocurrency technology. They're embracing blockchain in a positive manner because that's how you should do it. Because going by prohibition, you will simply drive it underground. It will be even harder for anyone to ever control it. That's not what you want. You don't want to chase that animal down to the ground because it will be a hell of a nightmare. You rather want to just embrace it, allow the innovation, allow the benefits to benefit the country, to benefit the people. It can win across the board for everyone. Of course, you're going to lose your lunch because your business model is going to get disrupted, but that's how the world works. Companies are happy that Uber just ate their lunch? Hell no. They're pissed. But what can you do about it? Nothing. Because that's the way the world works. You know, Tesla is going to dominate the world in terms of, you know, having all electric vehicles running around. Are the car companies pissed? Yeah, they will be. But what can they do? It's the future. And if you cannot stop the tide changing in history, it's going to happen.
But I do believe there's people that allow and control when and where and who gets to be that person who brings in the new. And it makes sure that it suits them when it comes. Because there's been many disruptions before. Elon Musk is not the first guy to think about putting a battery in a car. We wouldn't have golf carts if he were. But my dad was involved in that. But the petrol and California US-based guys killed it every time. This was during OPEC. They killed it. It wasn't the time for it. They weren't going to have it. And it's possibly because politically they needed the Saudi alliance to achieve their objectives. And maybe now that's changing. Anyway, we don't want to get too down there. How about we're going to get metal. It's ICOing. And there's a lot of buzz about it. And we like it, you and I. Tell me why on an ICO like metal, this is something everyone should be interested in.
Sorry, Francis, I just missed you out there for the past 5 seconds. Could you repeat the question again?
Yeah, for some or other reason, we have had a couple of little gaps, so I'll just repeat the question again. We're getting pretty excited about metal, you and I, ICO of metal. And you make
We're not doing an ICO anymore. I think it's going to be trading on exchanges in a relatively short amount of time. So MetalPay, I'll just sort of dive into it. So MetalPay is sort of this... in a nutshell, I believe it's the model, it's a next generation model for financial institutions. Essentially, it's going to be building a crypto bank on the blockchain. there are a lot of problems right now. One of the biggest issues that I see, you know, in terms of high risk merchant processing and banks. So banks really want to do business with a lot of merchants. They're actually, you know, blocking on a lot of business and a lot of revenue for themselves due to the uncertainty of, you know, a lot of cash based businesses cannot. Cash is just inherently problematic. You know, you can't, it's hard to trace. It's hard to keep track of everything. That's why the banks like digital currency so much. I mean, in fact, you and I and, you know, all the listeners, you've been using digital currency for the past 20, 30 years without even realizing everything we use is digital currency. In that sense, the banks have a complete audit trail, complete system. They can just view everything. They can, you know where the money is flowing. They can keep track of all that. That's how they're able to do business as a bank, because government is going to require audits and, you know, compliance, and all of these things require, you know, trails of information. And that's why cash is problematic, because banks don't like it when you take, you know, 100K out of the bank. They don't know where that money goes. And when you try to put that money cash back into the system, they don't know where that money comes from. So that becomes really problematic. So what Metal
banks are government's eyes on the ground on all things financial for the tax and usury extractors. Yes, sorry, yes. Carry on.
So what Metal aims to do is take the best. So the banks really want to work. Banks really love Metal, what they're doing, because it provides them, basically it combines cash and digital currency and marries them into digital cash. I mean, that's sort of like Bitcoin, but Bitcoin is kind of like this Wild Wild West still. I don't think anyone's going to be able to, like, sort of contain Bitcoin in a sense and morph it. People are trying to morph it into this thing that it's never going to be. But I see Metal as, you know, this new business model the system's not designed with penalty. Right now in Bitcoin, it's all penalty. Like, if you lose your keys, you're fucked. If you, you know, there's a lot of penalty, and it's really hard to get the average consumer to be comfortable with this stuff because it's scary.
Yeah.
It is. So we wanted to make cryptocurrencies mainstream by allowing people to be rewarded. So one of the biggest things with Metal, imagine right now we're using PayPal, Venmo, you're sending $100. On a good case, you know, if you're using Square Cash, I think that it's free, right? Email to email. But what they're building is like the network effect, right? So why is Square able to send money for free? I mean, it costs them money to do it, but they're building the network, right? And eventually they're going to throw in a POS. They bootstrap their network. So at Metal, we're saying basically, hey, how about when I send you $100, Francis, you get $105. With $100 that I sent you plus $5 in Metal, which is a cryptocurrency and a token, which sort of acts like a reward point for being, you know, utilizing the network. So kind of like if you're having a credit card.
Loyalty scheme.
Yeah. So
full banking payment type things.
Pretty much. So we're you know, there's going to be, you know, so why for merchants is beautiful, because we allow merchants, number one, there are a lot of merchants who cannot get banking infrastructure. So that's why they are doing cash only. And that's a problem. Cash logistics is one of the most dangerous. I mean, and right now in the U.S. you have civil forfeiture. Cops are literally just like, you know, waiting for these guys and take their cash, right?
Yeah.
So that's a real problem. And when you're, you know, a business, it becomes part of your business to have your stuff robbed and stolen. So the solution offers, you know, the reason we go after high risk merchants first, I mean, eventually it's going to go across all of stance, building like the pyramid of, you know, the fee structure to kind of feed the whole ecosystem. Right. So as a, you know, normal merchant, if you're just running a restaurant or bar, you're going to be able to, you know, achieve much lower fees even as what you're paying today. Like, well, I was just talking to some bar owners. They're paying 3.5%. They're so pissed off at Visa and MasterCard. They have to add 3% to their customers because the fees are just getting ridiculous. Right? So when I tell them, hey, how about cut your fees down to potentially zero and even negative, you will get paid to do payment processing. Because Metal, one of the key innovations of Metal is called POP, which stands for proof of process payments. So we utilize as a mechanism to distribute tokens and potentially any kind of tokens down the road. We're agnostic, right? We're not just, Metal is not going to be the only token that will be popped. Any companies any, you know, digital token, we think every company, every corporation, every individual eventually is going to have their own token. So we want to use that as a mechanism for people. Hey, how about you get some cryptocurrencies just by spending? So Metal is going to have a debit card, and it sort of acts like BitPay, right? So you can pretty much, you know, anywhere Visa is accepted, you know, all over the world, but you get incentivized to spend. Like, as both the merchant and the customer get incentivized to spend money. And when you build that network effect, like, who wouldn't want to use an application that gives you money while using it? It's like,
absolutely.
Everyone's going to get it. Yeah.
It's called the proliferation model. You just got to get it out there, and you want to pay people to viralize it for you, don't you?
We already have some, you know, 150 plus merchants, big merchants sign up. They're doing, you know, I think in the first year we could be smashing $1 billion in terms of process payments. And this is the
Amazon Uber model, where you run a loss effectively, but effectively your loss isn't cash. It's your proliferation of your country, of your coins.
No, you'd be surprised, because digital tokens are surprisingly, the margin to create digital tokens is surprisingly cheap.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised about the margin. It's actually a loss. I mean, the only cost is the running the infrastructure, running the company, running the stuff, but everything is non-custodian. It means Metal never controls your money. You hold your own keys. There is a way for key recovery for, you know, people who don't want to dive down into the complete control. They can, you know, give multi-sig. It's going to be, you know, multi-sig. Things like that. But if you want to be completely just on your own, you could do that. And so basically one of the key parts about the tokens is that, sort of like what the bank does, they kind of just sort of print money out of thin air kind of thing. This is kind of like that moment, but digital tokens, we're not really printing money. It just functions like loyalty points. It is a token. You know, you get tokens or you get points when you go shop at Amazon. They give you some rewards. Your credit card give you points to spend with them, so it's kind of like that, right? So that's the way that Metal is structured. We're not doing a public sale because we believe the future model for ICOs is come back to ICOs, but we think there's a better mechanism to allow startups to raise money and also get the tokens in the hands of the general public.
And let's just talk about businesses that are going to love this, like the cannabis industry that's in this quasi-gray area, paralegal in some places, not legal in others, never could get proper banking because they're treated as if they're some shady institution, but they're now getting corporate buyers like the big pharma industry needing their hemp derivatives. This is an industry that's getting sanitized. Hasn't had access to traditional banks, probably doesn't like them, sees them as the system that hasn't supported them when they were small, and is going to embrace this like no other, has already done a lot of trade in coin.
They have already embraced. We have signed up some of the largest dispensaries in the nation, all over, you know. So, and these guys have been just put down by the system for so long, and they're all dying for a solution. Right. And what's great is that I think the first time that these people can actually have an option, because they have been just put under a rock. And they are. And look, when this stuff gets completely legalized, these people are pioneers. And they've been taking so much shit for so long. They've been in the game for, you know, since medical marijuana was legalized. And they really have problems just getting proper service to the value that they're providing for society. And I think that's one of the reasons, you know, we literally have enough just for the cannabis industry alone to drive $1 billion in process payments the first year.
And you talk in the first person. What is your relationship with Metal and how you engaged with them?
So I'm one of the earliest investors in Metal, one of the probably the biggest investor too. And also Alphabet, we have invested in Metal. We're really believers of the team and the vision of Marshall Hainer. He's the CEO of Metal, a great guy, one of my best personal friends. I am an advisor to his company, and so that's my relationship with Metal.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I just want to do full disclosure because we both sound quite optimistic on it, and I don't want it to look like that. So you have a vested interest in it, and so does Alphabet.
I have both the tokens and equity ownership in the company.
Fabulous. Good. Well done to you. I feel envious. In terms of it's not going to go ICO. It's pre-placed then, and it's just going to list. Is that it?
You jumped out the past 5 seconds again.
Yeah, sorry. I'll say again. So it's not going to do a traditional ICO. The equity or the coins, it's pre-placed, and then the users are the coin holders.
So the interesting thing about Metal is like Metal itself is actually pioneering a new way. The vision that me and Marshall we see is traditional startups should raise money from accredited investors, build their proof of concept, you know, push it to market, and you can have the tokens, right? The tokens are here to stay. But the way you distribute the tokens is not via public sale, because there are a lot of people who don't understand. They're not educated enough to buy an IPO. They're not educated enough to buy an ICO.
Correct.
So we believe that, you know, that public sales should not be done. But you do want, like, why do these ICOs want to do ICOs? Because they like the publicity. They like getting this token into the hands of a lot of people. Right? It's good PR. It's good community building. But you can do that. And that's why we're going to use POP. So our slogan is like, I came up with a slogan. I said, don't ICO, just POP it. Like, you can just POP the tokens. All they have to do is just spend. Everybody spends, right? It's very hard to get someone to invest money in something. It's very hard for me to say, hey, $1,000, do this. But it's very easy for someone to say, hey, everybody spends money. Who doesn't spend money? Why don't you spend money and get rewarded?
Yeah.
So you begin to accumulate all these little tokens and things just from your daily spending. You don't have to think about investing. You don't have to think about – and guess what? It's like a super passive investment, because – You're accumulating great value just by your spending money.
Exactly. That's and as you say, everyone has to make purchases. And it also proliferates at the same time the methodology, or the network, not the methodology, the network, a lot quicker. And every time I want to send money to someone in a certain way and I say, hey, you should get this, other half of the recipient chain then has to come online so that I can pay them, because I want to be paid a little bit extra for using them. And then they realize the joys of it. And this is going to expand and spread really fast.
So that's why Metal, we didn't do the public sale, because we wanted the company to be the first pioneer of the model. Like, that's the future we envision. And we have to kind of like sort of put the money where the mouth is, right? So that's why we did it that way. That's the model we chose to go. And I think in the future, we could set a new standard for how startups raise their money and how startups utilize token technology and traditional finance to move forward. Because I personally don't think the ICO is a sustainable model. It was very disruptive in the past 4 years since the first. I participated in ICOs before they were even called ICOs, before we even knew it was called an ICO. I mean, it was just sort of like, hey, here's a great project. I want to raise some money, and people just gave money, right? That's kind of like the first rudimentary of that. But I think it's got to the point where, you know, it's sort of not sustainable. I think it may go on for a little longer, but I don't see the future where this is going to be the de facto way of raising money.
Well, the words are just a derivative of the existing banking model, which is an IPO, initial price offering for an equity.
So initial coin offering. Initial public offering. I think ICO in itself, the word is not, you absolutely don't want to talk about ICOs, because I think, especially in the US, you know, regulatory issues, uncertainties, you just don't really want to be associated with ICO. That's why Metal, we never did a public sale. It was completely to accredited investors and private, you know, family and friends. And then we distribute the tokens via POP, basically customers, consumers, merchants, who utilize our payment network, they will be able to get a piece of the tokens pretty much for free.
Okay, so if people like what they're hearing in terms of what they could do to A, support the company you've invested in, and to get a payment system which could, let's just understand this, people can receive fiat, they can receive crypto if they're merchants, and they can be paid in currencies and Bitcoin. So as a small business operator myself, who is willing and wanting to receive crypto for my services and all of this, I am deeply interested in being this particular from a business point of view.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, if you think about, like, right now, I think one of the biggest payment processors in crypto is BitPay, right? So what BitPay allows you to do as a business, in addition to taking just credit card, debit card, you know, you can take crypto. But the problem with that whole premise there, that I think, I personally don't think, I think BitPay just got bought by the Chinese, by the way. It's, I don't think it's public yet, but they're a dying business model. Because, so what Metal is so innovative, it allows, think about it this way. If you're a business, you already take credit card, debit card, cash, right? That's sort of like you already have that whole system to deal with. And now you got to take another system that takes crypto. So the number of people who come into your business and want to pay crypto, it's sort of like a niche. Not everybody has crypto to spend. But why don't we – but the merchants at the end of the day, some of them really want crypto. Like a lot of merchants that I see under BitPay, they just take Bitcoins in. They sell it into fiat and they get dollars. So they're just sort of using Bitcoin as sort of like a payment rail. They don't really care about crypto. They just want dollars in their bank at the end of the day. That creates that business model creates gigantic sell pressure on Bitcoin over the past three years. That's why I think it was one part of the fact that it drove the price down. I mean, there's other reasons, but I think one of the reasons is that consumers, merchants, don't really understand why they need crypto. Metal is targeting those merchants that have a deep problem and solving their problem. They want crypto at the end of the day. But if they just get paid in crypto, it's sort of like the funnel is very small. We pop open the funnel. Your customers can pay with debit card, credit card, bank accounts like a normal person do. You already do that, right? But imagine you don't have to fuck with another, you know, payment processor. You just use Metal. It's all in one solution. It cuts down your business logistics by a magnitude.
And if I'm a guy who lives in the crypto realm and just needs enough fiat to cover his expenses, let's say I'm going that way and I see it as the new money and I want to be early and I think at least, you know, the money sitting in my accounts, if it's in crypto, there may be appreciation relative to fiat while I'm waiting to pay it. Will I be able to have receive fiat and then convert as through part of the merchant everything
Absolutely.
Into
it? Absolutely. So as a business owner, if you just like, I don't even care about any of this crypto stuff. I just think, you know, I want to be stable. There's a stable dollar. So you can literally receive dollars just like you're receiving digital cash, like cash, but without the cash part, without the cash counting, without the cash logistics. You don't have to deal with that. But if you're like, hey, maybe I want, you know, expose 5% of my daily revenue to crypto, you can choose. So there's ability to sort of like change and, you know, based on your personal preference and the business's need, you can adjust that. It's very flexible. And all the audit trail, like for a company, accounting is perfect.
Yeah.
All of your credit card, debit card, and all your cash stuff, it comes into the system. Immaculate record. That's why the banks love it, because they want to do the business with those people. They can't because they're cash-based. Yeah. And those people who are cash-based because they can't get a bank. So it's sort of like this like logjam that both sides want to do business, but they can't. Metal is the removal of that logjam. It's going to marry the best of the both worlds. The best of digital currency and cash and combine them into one. That is going to be the Uber moment.
It will be a big moment, and I'd certainly be interested in the client. So let's talk some other cryptos and your take on certain things. So Ethereum is spilling at the moment. It's had a big up run. It's been probably – it's the second biggest market by market cap. It's had a huge, huge run. It's outperformed Bitcoin, and now it seems to have flattened out and getting a bit of a sell. Are people asking deeper questions about Ethereum's technology now that it's getting such a high rating? What's your take?
So for me, I've been an early investor in Ethereum, the ICO. I think it was like around 50 cents when we first bought them. And I, you know, I think gradually bought them. I bought a lot, some at, you know, $2, $3, $8. I even remember Ethereum was like 75 cents. My friends bought a lot. So coming from early days of Ethereum, for me, I've never been a huge fan of Ethereum because I think in the future it's not really competition to Bitcoin, but it's a different animal. First of all, it's a Turing complete system. Bitcoin isn't, so that inherently just, you know, very different than Turing complete basically means, you know, there's recursion, there's, you know, looping. That's what a computer does. That's how a computer functions. So it's essentially a computer, but we're so early in it. A lot of people don't understand the ecosystem. They're kind of sort of jumping in blindly. You know, they're kind of saying, you know, like there's a lot of, again, there's a lot of misconceptions in cryptocurrencies. So for me, I've talked to Andreas Antonopoulos, one of the most brilliant guy in crypto. If you ever get to check him out, he is brilliant. And we discussed about the issue of potential problems in Ethereum, especially what's happening right now, you know, the network congestions and all these issues. You know, he has told people, and I've been telling people, you know, like, hey, you know, Ethereum is going to have the same problems that Bitcoin. You know, it's technically it is 10 times less scalable than Bitcoin. So when the scalability issue hits Ethereum and you think Bitcoin for the past 3-4 years, they can't solve it. And you, I mean, it's going to be problematic. I think that's an issue. That's an obstacle. And if you look at all the projects, one of the most notable storage recently moved from Bitcoin to Ethereum, you know, from the token. I was there at their launch, the night before in San Francisco at Hacker Temple. I actually told people, I think moving to Ethereum for storage is one of the worst decisions you guys will ever make. Of course, you know, people think you're crazy and whatnot, but you're beginning to see businesses are not going to be scalable on Ethereum at the current stage. They will have to solve the scalability issue because the fees are now, you know, 92 cents, 96 cents. Bitcoin's like, what, $2? So you're not that far off. People complain about Bitcoin. And here's the thing about crypto. I don't really ever, if I'm asked my opinion about a coin, I'll tell you what I think. But I'm really agnostic. I'm not hating or loving. Whichever works, it serves the best purpose. It's like, if I need a hammer or something, I'm going to use a hammer. I'm not going to try to use a screwdriver.
Yeah.
So it's really come down to the application and what you're trying to do. And you just find the best thing for it. That's all.
And so is Ethereum trying to be too many things to too many people by claiming the platform space?
Exactly. So same thing with Bitcoin. Bitcoin underwent through that. The crowd was like, oh, Bitcoin is this. Bitcoin is going to do that. And everyone's trying to like, oh, Bitcoin needs to do this and that. No, Bitcoin just needs to do one thing well. Bitcoin can only do 20% of what everyone wants it to do. And 80% of it can't do. But it's going to do that 20% better than 80% of everything out there. You know, like that's what Bitcoin. So every coin, every token, every blockchain has a specific purpose. It is going to be very good at doing that. Don't try, like Bitcoin just needs a simple settlement rail. Don't try to complicate it. Don't try to add, you can add more stuff onto it, but fundamentally the core layer needs to function to move stuff from A to B and everyone in the world can recognize it's done. It's immutable. That's all it needs to do. For me, I see Bitcoin, you know, in the early days, it needs to function like a currency. It needs to function like a payment system. But is it really going to be designed for that? I don't think so. I think Bitcoin eventually will hit like astronomical numbers. People probably already hear people going on, you know, mainstream media saying, you know, I think Bitcoin's going to be $1 million. I was probably one of the first people to publicly say that in Coin Agenda, Puerto Rico, before, you know, everyone's going spewing like, you know, and I gave my reason why I think Bitcoin's going to $1 million. I think when we hit $1 million Bitcoin, you're probably not going to want to sell your Bitcoins to dollars because at $1 million, yeah. Bitcoin dollars are going to be a very different animal.
That could be a lot to do with dollar devaluation as well as the end game for one system comes in and the other for this. But you're going to have a massive change in relative valuation, I think, which can be not only just driven by the appreciation in Bitcoin, but the loss of value in the dollar.
So my personal investment strategy in crypto, I'm very agnostic. I'm very broad viewed. My mantra is pretty simple. It's basically long crypto, short fiat.
Yeah.
I've been doing that for the past 4 years and it's fantastic. And I think more and more people are going to jump on the bandwagon because crypto, this market, this technology, it's not to be ignored. And if you are still ignoring today, you're going to have the same moment of like, shit, I should have, you know, paid attention to a little more down the road. You will have the regret moment. Yeah. I had the regret.
Amazon at $18 wasn't as expensive as all the people that said, but it makes no profit.
It's like saying, you know, gold, if you bought gold back in the days when it was really cheap, yeah, it doesn't really produce any economic value, but it's a hedge against the fiat money system.
Yeah.
which today, you know, seeing Bitcoin at $2,700 versus what's gold today at?
Gold is half, less than half. It's in the 1,000s. I'll have to do a quick check for you.
So that alone, like when gold eclipsed, you know, when Bitcoin eclipsed gold price or came parity, that's something to be reckoned. That is not something to be ignored. And now you are almost at, you know, double, close to double. It's approaching there. What happens when it's 10x the price of it? Like, look, I have always been, you know, fond of Bitcoin. I own the domain digitalgold.io. I see Bitcoin as the digital gold. More and more people are seeing it as digital gold. It is going to be digital gold. It may just do nothing. It may just sit there. You know, it doesn't really produce any economic value, but it's going to function like the digital. In the digital realm, it's going to be the gold. It's the gold standard.
What's your 1 minute summary for something like Ripple that's been sort of accused as the banker's coin? And it's a, you know, it's a third in the market cap. It's had a great, we had a good run in it. I had a good run in it, and we actually managed to pick the turn as well when it then sold off substantially from 24s all the way back down to 9s. Where's your take on Ripple?
So when I say agnostic, a good friend of mine, he's actually the chief cryptographer at Ripple, David Schwartz. Their office is literally like four blocks away from me. I go there sometimes to hang out. Ripple, in terms of like, I respect what they have done, you know, back in the days with, you know, OpenCoin, OpenCoin Labs. They wanted to build something that's different than Bitcoin. So it was sort of like that moment where they're like, hey, you know, Bitcoin's great, but we want to build something that's different. So, you know, so in terms of like want to innovate, I respect that. I respect what they have done. I mean, they made a lot of money for themselves. They did very, very well. Everyone at the company is happy. But the thing that I don't align with is, if you look at Ripple's history, like Bitcoin, we know the genesis block, right, where Bitcoin was born. Like the first page of the ledger of Bitcoin, everyone can see it. You can go, you know, anyone can just go on a website, go on a block explorer. You can look at the first page of history. What happened there with Bitcoin? Who got the first Bitcoins? You can see that. That's the genesis block.
Yeah.
In Ripple, the genesis block is missing. There's a missing block.
Yeah.
That missing block contains information to who actually owns what. And to people's disclosure, I was just there a few weeks ago. They just told me, dude, we just locked away like 65 billion Ripple. I mean, that's more than circulation on what coin market cap is showing. The true market cap of Ripple is more than Bitcoin right now.
Yeah.
Close to, I would imagine.
But that's a bit of a false market because essentially they've traded a very small slice of the overall total.
Absolutely.
And we're only valuing the market cap of that which they've allowed to walk.
Yes.
And by storing and creating a limited supplied market, they've, in a way, it's a little bit of a hoodwink. I don't know if that valuation stands up.
No, that's why when people want to buy Ripple, they need to understand the whole backstory. Like, I mean, there's a lot of history. You got to dig back into the early days. There are a lot of history you got to understand, or else you may potentially. I mean, I'm not saying don't buy Ripple. I'm personally, you know, I don't have any Ripple. I just, you know, I my friends have made good money with Ripple. You know, I'm not hating. It's just, to me, it's about finding something that works for you. If you're looking into investing or dipping your toes into cryptocurrency, you got to find something that fits you, right? If you just buy everything that everyone else thinks and you don't know why you buy it, you're going to probably end up losing money. You have to understand why you're buying it, what you're doing.
Yeah.
You have to have an understanding of, like, why am I buying this? Basically, if you're buying this because someone else told you to, you need to know that. You need to be like, I'm buying this because someone else told me to, and there's a chance it may go wrong. Because if you don't have that kind of mentality, it's going to go wrong, and you'd be like, oh my god, crypto's a scam, it's a Ponzi. That's what people come down with. So I think education is one of the key points that I'm very, very keen on, especially in crypto. Having the proper education, educate people how to, you know, about this technology, because it is really revolutionary, it is really game changing.
Sorry, Jace, we lost
sound decision. And there's a lot of fluff misconception. Yeah.
Sorry.
What I'm saying is, the TLDR is there's a lot of misconception. Educate yourself well before, you know, diving into this space, because there's a lot of shit out there.
Yeah.
That's the TLDR. Yeah.
Yep. No, I get that. That's cool. So that's Ripple. And NEM, N-E-M, good developing behind them. What's your take on these guys?
Okay, so I'm going to be a little biased on NEM because I bought NEM when it was like 120 Satoshis. I don't know what it is at today. I had a lot of NEM, like 15 million NEMs. So something ridiculous. And I sold them too early. And that's the problem, you know, you learn. You know, I sold a lot of coins. So simply, that's why I say I missed out on hundreds of millions of dollars of potential opportunity, simply if you just held on longer. So I realized, you know, just be like, you know, one of the things I like about Warren Buffett says, you know, our favorite holding period is forever. I think if you just find solid coins, you hold on to them and accumulate, you're going to be doing very well in the next decade.
Yeah.
Very well.
So what are fundamentally, because for me, you're the fundamental, I'm the technical. What are fundamentally, in your view, the best value buys right now with the highest possible 10x, 25x, who knows, 100x in a year and a half?
Personally, I'm a big fan of ARK, ARK.io. I think very, very solid tech. It's a fork of Lisk. The head developer for Lisk is now, and they have I have a lot of friends there. I think they're building a really one of the best communities right now in crypto space. It's very innovative. They're aiming at, you know, building mainstream adoption for crypto. Very interesting project, ARK.io. That's something I'm personally very heavily into. The whole consensus and governance system and the tokens and, you know, things like that. So ARK I really like on a fundamental basis.
What size market cap are we talking when we talk ARK? Is it not quite far down on the market cap?
Let me just double check. I do believe it's somewhere around maybe 70 million. Let me just double check.
Number 50 rank.
It's 63 million. It's currently at 63 million. I see ARK could potentially, you know, be a lot more than that just because I understand. I've been following the project. I'm very deeply invested in ARK. So I'm pretty heavy on ARK. I like ARK. All the other coins, like smaller positions, which, you know, I see it's a good play, but to go heavy on something, I really have to like it.
Yeah.
And only coins that I went heavy onto in the past 5 years is, you know, Bitcoin, Litecoin, Monero, MadeSafe, ARK, Metal. So like six moments where you're like, oh, I need to get really big into this. So I missed a lot of, you know, it's a lot of boats with other good coins, but hey, you can't win them all, right? But those are the ones that I'm currently very, very focused and interested in.
Excellent. And a take maybe on, do you know Burst at all? Further down the rankings?
So funny thing about Burst, I think I bought some when I was like 45 Satoshis. I sold them at like, you know, 65. So I kind of missed that whole ride. I think, you know, like I've been more sort of turning myself more conservatively. I have to say I was getting pretty wild with the altcoins for the past, you know, 2 years. I want to dive myself down more into like a value investor because I don't see this continuing. You know, I may miss out in the next year of ridiculous profits, but I think I want to, as a whole, I want to be looking for, you know, great coins at great prices rather than buying, you know, not so great coins at great prices. So.
Yes. So you, in other words, the money is made in the sitting.
Yeah, basically the money is made definitely in a sitting. I just read the book, Reminiscence of a Stock Operator. I recommend by a friend. I think it's a great book for anybody right now inside this alt craze. You got to read that book because it describes exactly what's going on right now. And it gives you a sense of, you know, maybe we'll get some good thoughts out of that.
Written in the times of the roaring 20s, Jesse Livermore. And if you liked Reminiscences of a Stock Operator, their license for that book only recently expired. And a far better book, in my opinion, all Reminiscences was great. But if you enjoyed Reminiscences, you'll absolutely adore Plunger Boy. I bought Plunger Boy, and it's the first actual book written. Because Jesse Lefebvre, who wrote the original one, there was a 100-year... I think it was when it was first released, or it's some crazy license that no one else could cover this, the narrative of Jesse Livermore. And there was a lot of information that wasn't covered. It gave a lot about his life and how he moved and his relationship with his wife and his mistresses.
I'm literally, after this, I'm going to jump out. I'm going to go to a bookstore. I'm going to pick a copy of A Plunger Boy. So I love reading. I think reading definitely, you know, I think in this space, when I say education is so important, like having the proper information to make proper decisions, you really have to be informing yourself. And I think, you know, a lot of people tend to be like asking other people. And it's good. It's very good to talk to people. I talk to people all day, hearing all kinds of great information, learning a lot. But at the end of the day, you have to be able to do your own decisions. You cannot base your trading decision on other people. Because it's just, for me, I have, you know, I don't have a professional trading background, but I think in crypto, I want to become a very solid investor in this space. I do see there's going to be huge value that we haven't even begun to uncover. And I want to, you know, be able to seek those things out and really be part of that in the coming years. So I'm turning myself more into I would say my goal is like become like there's some heroes in my life that I want to be kind of influence me greatly. I think number one, Richard Branson. I was recently just there with him on his Necker Island at his home and spent a week. Great guy, one of my favorite heroes. You got Elon Musk. He's very innovative in terms of how he, you know, able to come up with things. Not necessarily agree with everything about him, but, you know, the business side of things. And then Steve Jobs, innovator, love the guy. And then finally, I think, Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett. I want to turn myself, the way I invest, like more like Warren, because I think, and hopefully, you know, perhaps one day I could become like a mini Warren Buffett in crypto. That's my...
That's the goal. So your top five holds, if you were doing a HODL strategy, I said to you, Jason, I'm taking the game away from you. You can't trade no more. You got to put your money, 20% in every crypto. You need to name five. And these are your holds. And 3 years later, I'm going to open up your cold storage and I'm going to give it all back to you. The game is to have the most effective Bitcoin amounts, whether you're holding Bitcoin or the others. So we'll convert it all back to Bitcoin. Which five are in your list? ARK,
Bitcoin, obviously, Litecoin,
Monero.
I would say ARK,
which is four.
And then finally, I'm going to have to say First Blood,
interesting. And what do we know about that one? That's one you've not mentioned.
First Blood is basically this, it's more specifically targeting toward competitive gaming. Basically, it's a token where the competitive gaming space is huge. For anyone who don't know, it's big. ESPN has begun playing competitive sports in gaming because people don't, it's going to overtake popular sports. It's going to overtake baseball. It's going to overtake football. It's going to overtake soccer. The people, I find it more joy watching other people playing games than me playing myself. It's just sort of like the social interaction. So what First Blood does is allow people to bet on other people while playing video games competitively across the entire internet. So imagine
the voyeurism in gaming is unbelievable. You know, the whole extent of people paying.
Yeah. So imagine let's just imagine you're watching soccer. And you're watching the team play in real life. What if you could bet on any player or any team in real time, like as you're watching, with a token? That I think that's what I'm talking about. Like, but competitive sports, esports is much bigger. It's going to be huge. I was actually at the beginning of the scene when it first started. It took off in like 2001, 2002. I never got into the scene, but I had, you know, I was sort of involved. But unfortunately, my parents would never let me get into competitive esports. They were like, you're not going to play video games for your life. You know, like you got to go be a lawyer, doctor or something. I'm like, but, you know, and I literally got the opportunity to be able to, like, my friends went on to be champions. You know, that's how deep dive I was in. Like they were running, they went to MLG, Major League Gaming, you know, that was the early days. It was back in the days where you're kind of like, you're having LAN parties with friends, kind of sort of this underground movement. It wasn't like mainstream at all. You're just kind of underground. You're trying to duke it out in the local tournaments and then you're moving up into the bigger city and you kind of build your way into the track and, you know, being that whole vibrant. I was there, but but I didn't have the opportunity to, you know, pursue my dream because, and that's why one of the things I want to do in the future is to actually own esports teams. I want to help kids who have the talent and the passion to become professional esports players. I want to, like, you know, it's like owning a soccer team, but you help these kids, you know, you're going to take them travel around the world, play in tournaments. They're going to be like rock stars. That's what I wanted to do as a kid. I never got, that's one thing. So esports, cannabis and crypto, it's like my big focus sectors in the next 20, 30 years.
And the cannabis coins, you what about those? You haven't mentioned them. Surely they're going to do great. Some of these cannabis coins, are they direct cannabis farming plays? You know, like metal is clearly the business. The volume went really bad.
I haven't had a complete analysis over every single cannabis coin. I know what they are. I just haven't really deep dive. I believe, personally, I just think, man, like, if you want to be big in a cannabis play, like, metal.
Yeah.
Metal's, it's a real business that's going to bring real value to a lot of states, not just the cannabis business. That's one. But if you're into popcorn, cannabis, I think those are sort of just gimmicky. It's more gimmicky. It's not. There's no real business model there. They're just kind of sort of putting on the pun and play. You know, it's like, you know, it's not really no substance there. So, I mean, you can probably make some money speculating off of that. I think people have done, you know, pretty
but
well.
But surely
with it.
If these farmers scale up, and I come from a country where the soil's real good and they have the Durban poison, and actually know of people that have been illicit farmer growers and have, you know, commercial clients and are real connoisseurs. In a legitimized way, they're not, and they don't deal and have people on the street. This is like a proper farming business with legit buyers. And this game is growing, and cannabis and hemp use is going through the moon. I mean, now you have your hemp in protein powders. If you go to gym, you have your hemp in clothing. You have your hemp
cannabis
in so many uses.
Is bigger than chocolate and wine.
Yeah. So doesn't that mean there's bull potential in the crypto coins? If you get to ride the profitability in some way, if it's kind of like a share for cannabis and people start making purchases again.
Absolutely. No, but for me personally, I'm just very interested in metal because I see they have the proper business model to really target an industry. To, like, the thing is, first you identify the problem, then you have to come up with a solution, right? So I see the problem and the solution they're offering. And I don't see that in the other coins. Like, it's not
true.
Clarified. It's
and,
not.
And what you're applying also selling the shovels to miners. You don't have to get involved in the gold per se. Some might hit gold, some might not. But you can certainly sell the shovels to the miners.
That's what metal is. You're selling the picks and shovels to not just the cannabis industry. I mean, that's one target. But, like, that's what I think the best business model is, because if you're, I don't want to actually touch the plant or be in, you know, in that whole growing business. I think that's, physical products are very difficult.
Yeah.
I dealt enough with physical things. I think if you touch physical products, you get sucked down by gravity, right? So I'm very digital oriented. I think the digital is the future.
I get that, and I agree with that. Scalability is so much easier when everything's electronic. Jason, this has been awesome. I want to give you a final minute or two just to give us your wind-up and your take on everything. If you were leaving all the listeners with a specific message on how to play this or advice in terms of your experiences in the crypto realm, what would be your sort of 10 commandments, 5 commandments, or message that you would choose to leave everyone with?
So, the message I would say, just coming from my own personal experience, I would say, if you're thinking about, if you put $1,000 in or $100 in or even $10 in, let's put it this way. A dollar that you put into Bitcoin back in 2010, today yields about $80 million. So you can think today, if you put $1,000 or whatever amount you can afford to, you know, sort of dip your toes in the game per se, you're going to be like, well, what if you get scammed? What if you lose this money? But think about it. The opportunity cost that you could potentially cost you down a decade from now is going to be greater than any amount of, maybe it's going to be greater than all the money you have at the moment. Like, that's what I went through. I was literally like, dude, are you telling me that if I put in even 10 bucks back in Bitcoin, when I first discovered it, today it yields 800 million. that's sort of the moment you're just like, wow, I definitely, okay, I am in this deep. I am, like, you know, all in. I believe in this. I believe in this with enough conviction. You're going to reach that point one day. But I think, you know, as of right now, even if you don't get it, even if it feels fuzzy, just take even like $100, buy something. And just, you know, at worst you lose $100. I mean, what the hell you got to lose? But if you don't do that, if you don't take that right now, the opportunity cost is going to cost you down the road. It's going to suck. I mean, it's like the one story that I always like to bring up, Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, and who's the other guy that founded Apple?
Woz and Jobs were the two. They were just two.
Yeah, there was one other guy. So when he sold his, when he decided that, you know.
Oh, there was, yes, there was one guy who got out really early and probably is a normal
everyday. He sold his share for $5,000. He sold a third of Apple for $5,000. You're like, yeah, you know, seemed like a great decision back then because he took his $5,000 back. He didn't lose that $5,000. But today, how much money are we talking about? What's a third of Apple worth? So I think the opportunity cost is what people should really be looking at. If I don't do this, what is that going to cost me in 5 years or 2 years or 3 years? Yes. No, even 6 months from now on. You think like that, then you begin to kind of sort of balance, oh, maybe I could, you know, I could risk $10. Because you go and buy a coffee every day for $5. So come on. Do something for yourself.
I'd like to give my take on what you're actually saying there, if I can, if you'll allow me in. There's a number of fears that you get in trading, and the top two is the fear of losing money, which is the most directly understood. It's very basic, and no one wants to lose money. The second one is fear of missing out, which you later taught me is known in the crypto world as FOMO, F-O-M-O. Thank you for that. Yeah, I'm being educated on the slang and the jargon here in the crypto world. So fear of missing out. And the irony with fear of missing out is that it's only often fully appreciated in hindsight. Yes. And the full extent of it. You can start to feel fear of missing out when you see something even begin moving, but you only truly quantify the extent. And downside risk is limited to that which is put in. Upside risk could be infinite, could run into 7 digits, could run into 8 digits, depending on who you are and how long you hold and how big you get in. That's a great, great message. I totally like it. People should wake up, take on the crypto. Jason, this has been awesome. I look forward to talking to you again. We'll talk on more specific topics.
Thank you very much, Francis. I had a great talk. Very enjoyed it very much. We will, you know, love to, you know, come on anytime to speak. You know, I love the ability. I think education is really important. We should, you know, getting more and more people involved into this, you know, exciting industry. I think it's going to be one of the cool things that we can do. So
let's be the Pied Piper.
Yeah, we'll both absolutely. Be Pied Pipers
for crypto.
Thank you very much. Have a good day. Rest of you guys enjoy the rest of your day and to a great future.
All the best. Cheers, Jace. Thank you.
All the best. Take care. Bye bye.
Thank you.